Breaking Cyberspace, and welcome to episode 266 of the Double Density Podcast with your host, Brian and Angelo. Double Density is your home to tech tales and paranormal primers. Now, first things first, Angelo, we must discuss your favorite holiday of the year. We're recording here on April 20th, 420. Angelo, my favorite weed head. You're my favorite weed head. You're always talking about marijuana. You're always trying to push Cheech and Chong albums onto me. How are you celebrating today? What's the plan?
I didn't even think about it. We should have, instead of recording at 12:20, we should have been recording at 4:20. I did not.
It would have been amazing, yeah.
At all. I apologize.
Thank you. It would have been like the same type of like synergy with like, you know, the lunar eclipse, right? Yeah. Like just the door being a little bit more open to the world of Weedland. As we famously discussed, you are not a weed man at all. So it's just another normal day for you.
I was just about to continue with the ruse and say my weed-addled brain did not think that it was 420. No, I feel like these days I'm the opposite of like a burnout where I'm up in the morning at 5:45, have my coffee, come downstairs, do some workouts, then go for a run. I'm like becoming
we talked about this privately, but you're still going for runs. So this is like you're building up.
I feel like saying it's a run is a strong word. So right now I'm doing intervals where I start with a 5-minute walk, and today I did 5 intervals of 2 minutes of running and 1 minute of walking. And then ending with, so it's about, I can't classify this as running just yet.
Right.
I did have a fun joke with my friend this morning saying, I did my Pilates and yoga and now I went for a run. This is because we were talking about the race where there was a sprint race this weekend.
Right.
And I said, I feel like I'm a middle-aged woman in Los Angeles.
Or just on the outskirts of Los Angeles, like right somewhere like a little more rural in California.
Yeah, I'd be going for a hike in that mountain you see in the I don't know what is that place, like they're always showing it in often in rom-coms, right? They're going hiking at this place in Los Angeles.
Well, there's a ton of places to go.
Okay, whatever, it also always looks like the same place. But anyway, that's how I'm the opposite of a burnout. I feel like it's helping with my former back issues now that I can actually, I feel like it's like use it or lose it at this point.
Yeah. I feel like the next step for you is you got to get yourself a standing desk of some sort.
I have one at the office. I like to sit. I'll use it at the office. At home, I'm fine because I'm alone, so I can kind of get up and walk around. I don't like standing at the desk for too long, to be honest with you. So
yeah, I do intervals too, like you were saying.
But I see you standing, though. I see you standing.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I love standing.
Yeah.
Most meetings I stand for. Sometimes I'll work for like an hour or two standing, and then I'll sit. I think it's a good balance. I always have to have my shoes on if I'm standing.
That's I won't stand for meetings, Brian. I prefer you most.
I'm surprised you didn't cancel this. I do a weird – speaking of like jogging and running, I do a weird thing. So on Wednesday nights, I go to music trivia, and then the subway station near my house is like a block away. And sometimes I'll just like sprint the block home for some reason.
Good job.
For no reason, like I don't even know why I do it. I just started doing it. It's kind of fun.
Well, that's really good for you, though.
Yeah, it was just a very interesting thing.
As long as you don't
like,
use yourself.
No, exactly. It's 10:30. I also am not doing it when it's nicer, right? So it's like 10:39. I just do my 4-minute sprint or whatever.
My wife and I were on the island proper of Montreal on Wednesday night, and
Does it feel like you enter Jurassic Park when you enter Montreal?
Well, this is where I was going with that, because we couldn't help but laugh at just being surrounded by bicycles, runners, pedestrians.
Yep.
And we were just laughing because we rarely drive. And I feel like it's one of the worst areas of Montreal, where we're driving by Mount Royal and up into we were going to Awake. So we went to like the funeral parlor there, and a beautiful area. But it feels so claustrophobic. There's so many people around you.
There always is. And just, ironically enough, Angela, because it's 420, you talked about Mount Royal. Usually there's like a big congregation of like weed lovers on the mountain.
Hitting their bongos, right?
Yeah. Well, that's Sundays, right?
Okay.
Tam-tams is Sundays. But no, I'm talking about like a congregation of stoners just on the mountain on 420. And it's been happening for years and years and years.
And now it's legal, so who cares?
Yeah, exactly. Who cares, right? They're self-contained on the mountain.
Brian, you know what else is legal?
I'm very scared to answer this. What else is legal, Angelo?
Getting a new phone. So you got a new phone, right, Brian?
I did. I got a new phone, yeah. So I had an older iPhone. It had been 4 years, which is like planned obsolescence, like twice the lifetime of it.
On the type of phone you had, was it an SE or was it like an 11?
It was the 10.
It was a 10. So at that point, the 10 is actually way older than 4 years, Brian.
The 10 is seven
years old at this point.
I know. I got in at the end of its life cycle because it was super cheap.
Yeah. So you were way beyond the 4 years.
And yeah, exactly.
You moved on up, my friend.
I did. I got a Pro. I decided to get the Pro, the iPhone 15 Pro.
theoretically, you're good for way more than 4 years, which is the reason I got one, too.
Yeah. Fingers crossed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I also decided to do that because I'm going on vacation next month. I would, for once in my life, I've never, like, you know, my two phones ago was the SE. It was kind of like the, not, I don't want to say like the budget, but the tinier option, right? And then I did the 10 at the end of the life cycle of the 10. And for once, I was like, you know what? I'm going to do a little bit fancier. I deserve it. You know, I'm treating myself to the better camera display.
Well, think of it this way, right? It's a phone that'll probably last you a little longer. The batteries on these phones, Apple came out and said that they had made a mistake and it's actually going to be better for 1,000 cycles instead of 500, which is amazing.
Well, so, I also set it to the 80% thing in the settings.
Oh, you are doing that. That's interesting. So
yeah, I'm not going to do it on vacation process for the longer days when I'm using it for like pictures and videos, but I'm using 80% around the house.
Huh. I like having it at 100%. I like seeing the 100%. And the thing is I could easily set it to 80 because on most days of regular use, and you know, we've talked about how I don't really like using my phone for a lot of different things. Even if I don't charge it during the day, I'm still at like 65 to 70.
Yeah, I usually end the day at like 50.
So that's pretty good. And keep in mind, I do have the bigger phone, so the battery does last a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And how are you finding the camera? It is pretty
loving
good,
it.
Right?
I went to a show last week. It was great. I was able to zoom in much more easily. It wasn't as green or pixelated. I took a picture at 4x that actually looks super clean of something that was happening nearby me last week. And I was like, oh, this is amazing.
I used to say not to zoom in on the phone because I felt like cropping was better. But that's changed in the last 4 or 5 years where Apple has done something with actually zooming in on the phone where it is actually better instead of cropping.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, I was taking something at a distance, right? It was across the street.
Yeah. And so, I used to like balk at people like, oh, you're zooming in. Now, I still see people do that on crappy Android phones. But on iPhones, on better Android phones, you can, if you're zooming in, you're actually doing yourself a service because it's.
Yeah, I was very happy with the result. I was kind of surprised actually when I saw the process photo. I was like, oh, I'm not used to this. Like, this is kind of an interesting kind of upgrade to what I'm usually used to, the sort of like the grainier look of anything past a 2X.
Where are you with cases on your phone?
I got an OtterBox.
Oh boy, you're like hardcore.
Yeah, well, I'm also like, I'm scared of breaking it. Even though I have the service care stuff, and I also got one of those like
You got Apple Care.
The plastic screen. Oh, no, so basically, like my service provider offered me, it's $5 less a month for pretty much the same thing.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Through their like private service.
Okay. I don't like screen protectors. I've never been able to abide by them. I tried one when I got my first iPhone, the iPhone 4, and we put it on. There was a bubble on it, and I took it right off, and I never looked back. I've actually been experimenting with cases because they're not that expensive anyway. I got an expensive case.
Well, the OtterBox was like 50 bucks, though.
Well, no, the OtterBox is expensive. And when I first got this phone, I got the Apple silicone case, which I do like a lot. And recently there was a Elago case, which was like on sale for $15, a clear case, and I really liked the look. And today there was a Taurus case with a ring on the back that flips out so you can actually stand your phone up. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give that a try because it was like 40% off on Amazon. So I'll give that a try. And I have these three cases now. I like the look of the clear case. What color did you get, Brian?
I got black, basic black.
You got a black phone. Okay, so yeah. I have a white phone.
My phone's black. My case is black. Don't need to think about it.
My first white phone. But I'm really happy with it. I'm glad you're happy with it. You're gonna be taking great pictures while you're away.
Exactly.
In London. Take some pictures of ghosts, UFOs.
I don't know if I told you this. I'm going to Stonehenge.
Well, then you're gonna see lots of orbs, lots of ghosts.
I'm so excited to lick some of those rocks illegally. Very excited.
I can't wait. You'll get high from the moss.
Exactly. Well, let's back things up a sec. You were talking before about black and white, which are two colors, and there are two different varieties of options for something we want to talk about today, which is the humane pin, right? Available in three different colors, but technically like two, like a white and a black variant.
Yeah, there's a matte
Angela,
black.
If I were a dummy, how would you explain the human AI pin to someone?
So there's two colors, but there's a cheaper option of the matte black, and then the glossier black and white are $100 more. So,
yes.
But let's start with the base model. They're all equal in terms of internals, but $699 gets you a basic
humane pin. Okay, before the price, though, let's get into what it actually is.
What it is. Okay, well, it's a pin you wear because nobody likes their smartphone, Brian. Everybody hates having a phone. They hate it. They don't
This sounds like one of those old infomercials, you know, like, you're making too much mess with your blah, blah, blah. Like,
do you have to actually look at something, Brian? Instead, like, why do you want to look at a screen? It burns your retina.
It's tiring.
Nobody likes phones. They begrudgingly spend thousands of dollars on these things. They don't like them. And like, when you're out and about, you never see people looking at their phones because they don't want to be doing that. They should take a page out of the Humane book. Now, this company was started by two people that used to work at Apple and didn't like the direction, I guess, that was going. And they decided to start a company that works with AI and hardware to create this Humane pin where you have this thing on your person all the time. You can tap it sort of like a communicator from Star Trek. I don't know if I hadn't in the reviews I watched, nobody really made that comparison, but
there's a ton of comments online about that.
Yeah, I figured it looks like that. You kind of hold it because it's one cool thing is that it's not always listening. So that's kind of neat. So you kind of have to hold it for you to talk to it. And you can say as simple as, hey, what do you see in front of me? And it'll explain your surroundings because you need to know that, I guess. Sometimes you can ask it questions. It'll answer. It'll sync up with some of your services. If you want to listen to music, you have to be a Tidal user, which is bonkers.
That's what I didn't understand is whether or not you get a Tidal subscription with
–
because
don't.
We talked before about the price, right? Because it's $700 the base
plus
model and then
$24
USD per month.
Yes.
For all of the services, for the storage. And I don't know if that includes a Tidal subscription.
It does not. As far as I know, it does not. It does seem to include like a connection though, right? Like it's the internet is connected to this thing with that $24 a month, I think. I don't think you also on top of it need a cellular connection.
No, so that's part of it, right? Is you're paying for the service, right? Because I think it's with one of the major carriers in the States at least.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think it's available here in Canada just yet. And
no,
I don't think
unfortunately,
it ever will
it's not
be because...
I know that you're just, you know, looking to burn money, right? So let's talk about the human AI pin a bit, right? Let's talk about the features, right? So it has a camera. It has a little bit of a projector, and you linked to the Marquise Brownlee review of the human AI pin that were included in the show notes, which I thought was kind of interesting the way that, like, the hand tech move, right? So basically, like, this little projector allows you to cycle through menus using different things. And he was explaining it's kind of like holding, like, a
marble like in your hand.
A marble or a ball or something that you're flipping around, which I thought was very, very interesting. The projector isn't great necessarily, right?
No, 720p.
Yeah. And Marquise and like a bunch of other people online have also explained the larger fundamental problem with this, having this like AI assistant with you, giving you like wrong information. I've seen so many interesting tidbits of things that got pulled out of like people using this and getting just factually like basic stuff wrong.
Yeah, there's another review I'll put in the show notes by David Pierce from The Verge. And he said he had a lot of trouble getting that interface with the projector. I will say the projector is kind of cool in your hand. It's a neat concept. The problem is it doesn't work super well because you can't get it to do the things you want it to do. And the reviews I've watched, all of them have said when it works, it's kind of cool. But most of the time, it's not working, especially if your connection's not strong. And then it becomes a disaster.
Yes, and that's the other issue too, because multiple reviewers I've watched will ask it a question, and obviously the question has to go back up to the cloud, has to find an answer and bring it back down. So sometimes there is a bit of a lag there. Sometimes it can be 5 seconds, sometimes it can be 10, sometimes it can even be 15, depending on the internet connection too.
You thought Siri was bad. Siri's amazing compared to this thing.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about Siri. Let's talk about Apple phone, iPhones and Androids, right? Because there is no app for either ecosystem right now. The Humane pin asks you to... Humane is like, hey, go to our website. Go to our website. Go to your like your client space in order to... because you can also shoot 15-second videos and then take pictures. So everything is available in this hub on the net.
Yeah, they upload while the pin is charging. And it was Marquez's review where he talked about how the battery is super wonky on this. Sometimes he'll have 2 hours. Sometimes he'll get 4 hours. And the thing that is actually concerning to me is that you have this thing on your chest, right? So it's like right next to your heart, and the battery is getting warm, and you actually feel it on your skin getting warm, which I don't like even having my phone in my pocket when it's getting warm. It's disconcerting. And I do understand that like nothing's been there's all the evidence points to the radiation and stuff from these phones being non-ionizing. So it's not dangerous, so to speak. But, like, it's still, like, weird having this up against your skin the whole time. I don't like keeping my phone in my pocket, even though the logical mind in my brain says, according to everything people are saying, is that it's safe, although they used to say that about cigarettes. So, like, you can never really take everything.
I don't know if that's a one-to-one.
No, I don't think
it is. That's false equivalency right there. Something interesting, but the reason it's happening is because the pin backing is also an extra battery.
Exactly that, yes.
And so, but the thing is, like, it's done magnetically, and the heat conduction isn't 100%, which is why you feel the heat on you, because it's actually losing some of its power as it heats up.
Yes, when you charge, so do you ever charge your phone wirelessly, or are you always plugged in?
Always plugged in.
Okay, I use an Anker Cube, which I I got a few months ago when it was on sale, because otherwise it's too expensive. But the Anker Cube is fun because it's a little tiny cube that you have your phone, watch, and AirPods. You can all put them on to charge, and that's perfect for me because I have all three. And I feel MagSafe is a bit better than Qi charging in terms of how hot it gets. But wired is always best. Obviously, you can charge your phone faster. And the thing is, wireless, there's a lot of heat lost, and you feel it in this. However, this thing comes with, like, a lot of charging accessories.
Yeah, it comes with two extra ones.
Battery.
Yeah, because the pin has a battery, and then the backs of them also each have a battery.
And then there's an extra charger on top of that. And all the reviews have said the hardware, top-notch. Like, really nicely made, nice aluminum, heavy, although... In retrospect, maybe being heavy is not a good thing, because one of the
if you wear loose clothing, right? Like, for example, like my hoodie could probably do it without sagging, but the shirt you're wearing will sag.
Yeah, this is like an oversized like sweatshirt.
You look puffy.
Yeah, I'm not, but this is like this is a Lululemon top where large fits me really well. Mm-hmm. Although I recently bought this large, so it feels too big, and I bought a different large, which feels too tight. But usually, large is good for me. Anyway, besides that. It's funny because Marques Brownlee pointed out that in the introductory videos of the Humane Pin, everybody's wearing like stiff jackets.
Like very solid
thicker,
fabric.
Yeah, thicker fabric. So, of course, it'll look better like that.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, because and Marques said in his interview, and it was something I was thinking from the start, is the fact that it doesn't have a phone component to it, of course, is because you want, like, Humane's looking to create its own ecosystem with this, right? So, it's looking to not be an accessory to a phone. It's looking to be its own thing. Something else that I was thinking about that I didn't see come up much is, like, I'm wondering how weather resistant it is.
Oh, yeah. Nobody mentioned if it's waterproof or not. I guess it has to be if you're wearing it on the outside.
Well, I'm also thinking about the cold, too, right? I'm very curious. Like, if we're in Canada and we decide to go use our AI assistant outdoors, what does that look like? What are the limitations? Will it accept me pressing down with my gloves on?
Things
like
that. Not available in Minnesota.
No, exactly. I'd be very curious to know about its resistance in terms of weather stuff. And that is obviously like a secondary issue, because the primary issue is that, like, there's no practical use case right now for it to be the go-to use for like information you want to look up or store.
$700 plus $24 a month for something that doesn't really work that well. And chances are, you're going to want a smartphone too. Like, I don't see anybody who has this thing is not already a smartphone user and doesn't love their smartphone.
Yeah. And there are a lot of issues, I think, it's a cool concept. It's an interesting, if anything, like the 1.0 is the proof of concept, right?
Yeah. Sort of like the Apple Vision Pro.
Yeah. Yeah. Still, I think we're in the same ecosystem, right? Because if you consider like the classic technology adoption cycle, right? Of the innovators and the early adopters, right? So we're in the innovator space, but then the chasm happens of the early adopters. And how do you get those early adopters? That's killer use cases.
Yeah.
And right now, I can't think of a good one.
No, there's nothing here. It's not like I was an early adopter of the Apple Watch. I had one and no one had one. And that first Apple Watch was slow. But it worked. It was fine. I was really happy with it. I kept it for a few years. It was okay. The Apple Watch I have now is way, way better in terms of speed and how it works and everything. So who knows? Maybe in 7 years, right? Because I have an Apple Watch 7. Maybe in 7 years, this thing will be better. But do you feel it's like innovation for innovation's sake and not really trying to solve a problem that needed to be solved?
I agree with that. I also think that, like, it's, you know, and Humane hasn't outright said this, but I think the fact that it wants to exist in its own ecosystem is going to be a very hard sell for those early adopters because of the fact that, like, you kind of have to maintain two ecosystems at once.
Right now, I don't foresee anything going beyond the smartphone, like beyond in terms of iterations of a smartphone where they get smaller, thinner, lighter, more like more robust, where they don't break as easily. Like, those are the next innovations in smartphones, but it's small enough. You have a supercomputer in your pocket at this point all the time. I feel like there's like a resistance here towards the smartphone, which most people don't want. You kind of have to self-regulate. Like, we do that, right? Like, we have our, we try to set our limits on our phones. We don't.
Yeah. I mean, yes and no, because I've been playing a lot of Marvel Snap recently. So.
Okay. Okay. But that's different. You're not like doom scrolling and stuff, and you're not addicted to your phone. You're like, just,
I'm mostly on Reddit, honestly. Like, if I'm thinking like social media, like sites, okay. And I've curated my existence on there, and like the subreddits that I go to are like joyful places for me.
Nice. Like, and I feel like my social media on an iPhone now is YouTube.
Zero.
No, it's like a YouTube, I feel, is almost like my social media. I go.
No, you don't interact with anyone on
there.
It's
true. You're right. Like, I don't even comment on YouTube. And Reddit, I kind of look at it as well. But in terms of, yeah, there's no other social media on there.
You're not really like an engager.
No, I don't. No, not really. And it's funny because I have a podcast.
Do you leave reviews at all?
Very, very, very rarely.
Yeah.
Like, super rare. I can't even think of when I've left a review. I've left reviews for people who I kind of feel like I know, or I kind of know. Like, so for example, when Dan Morin, former guest of the show, released his books, I always review them.
Yeah.
Or I think I reviewed Casey Liss's app, right? Because it's Casey and he's been a guest and he's a great guy. And I remember my roofer asked me to review him on Google, on whatever Google reviews are. And
yes, that literally is
literally called Google reviews. Okay.
Yeah.
And I reviewed him and he thanked me for that. And that's it. Like, maybe, you know, it's good to have like an English review sometimes for something in Quebec. So
I went to the dentist this week and I already left a Google review. My dentist is amazing. Shout out to Dr. Lazam.
Shazam?
Lazam, L-A-Z-A-M. Yeah, I wish. Now, he's super cool. He's super nice, super affable. Does his job quite... Like, I the first time I met him, I had to go through a root canal.
Fun.
And it was a very pleasant experience despite the physicality of it. So he has a patient for life there. Anyway, so like I left the clinical review, obviously, because of that. I largely leave positive reviews when I can, except for when I got bed bugs at a hotel last year. That was just a no-no for me.
Yeah, I didn't leave it, but one of our travel friends left a really bad review for a resort we went to in Cuba 5 years ago at this point. It was by far the worst food and the worst experience I've ever had at a resort. And that's bad food in Cuba is saying a lot, because resort food in Cuba, it's not like you're going to a nice restaurant in Havana. It is because people have talked about how good some of the food is in Havana. The food at resorts in Cuba is shockingly bad.
Yeah.
And this was that bad that we're compelled to read a review.
Anyway, so to bring things back to talking about the Humane Pen, Angelo, clearly we're not adopting it because, one, it's not available here, but two, there's no use case for it that I can't get out of quickly, more thorough, and probably more clear in the case of taking pictures and things like that get from my phone.
I think the video tops out at 720p and is only for 15 seconds.
Yeah, there you go, right? So, you know, get a GoPro. If you want to stick something to yourself to, like, shoot things, like, get a GoPro, I guess.
Much better, much less expensive, much clearer. And, I don't see this becoming the next big thing, but maybe either. I'll be wrong.
Double density. Angela, do you want to keep on talking about AI with me?
Sure.
Cool. All right, so last year, I foolishly bought a ticket of 10... film tickets to the Fantasia Film Festival, which is like one of the largest, world's largest genre film festivals, right? So horror, sci-fi, documentaries, et cetera, et cetera. And I saw a movie called Late Night with the Devil, which blew me away. And it's on Shudder now, and I watched it with my wife last night, and she cannot stop talking about how good it is. And the conceit is that it is archival footage of a late night talk show, Halloween night, 1977, where something goes wrong.
Okay.
And it is an incredible movie. That is marred by a total of 3 seconds of problematic issues. And that is because some of the interstitial titles that they're using, though, We'll Be Right Back, Welcome Backs, were generated via AI. Like, the imagery they used for those was generated via AI. And so a lot of people have taken umbrage to that idea of these people using AI to do so.
Did they, was the artwork kind of derivative of real artists' work?
It wasn't, though you could clearly tell, like, one of the skeletons at one point, the hand is, like, super weird, and that's usually the telltale with a lot of this imagery stuff, is you look at the hands first to tell what's going on, right? And so some people saw that that was off. And it was just a really weird conversation that and discourse that's happening online, and I get all of the points. It sounds like the production crew was integral in using that, like, it wasn't adversarial against it. From the way it understands, so I think it was just more so to get to a conclusion that they wanted in a faster time frame, which I can understand. Also, 3 seconds of a 90-minute film should not be the deciding factor on whether or not you like the film necessarily either.
Was this a low-budget film in that they needed to use AI? A
couple of million.
Okay, pretty low budget at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's generated a crazy... It's generated like 10 times its budget or whatever. Honestly, like, it... I unquestionably would recommend the movie to anyone.
I wish it was on a service I had. I'm not signing up to another streaming service, though.
No, I mean, like, Shudder's mine. I love that kind of stuff, right? So, like,
I know, for sure. Like, for me, it wouldn't work because I'd be the only person watching it.
I think it's going to show up eventually on other, like, streaming services. Definitely, because I think that, like, they acquired exclusive rights to it. But usually what happens in that is it trickles out into, you know, Amazon Prime, Netflix, et cetera, et cetera. So I think eventually you'll be able to see it. It's just right now it's on Shudder. And yeah, it kind of led to a really interesting discussion in my mind about, like, where do we draw the line, right? If the production staff themselves are using that as a tool in their toolkit, makes sense. If they're trying to replace the jobs of others, what does that look like?
It's not a good look, unfortunately. No. Even though it's 3 seconds, it's not a good look.
Yeah, I'm very conflicted because I think that, like, it's very unfortunate that the discourse is surrounding something that the actors, who are very, very good in this movie, had nothing to do with.
Definitely. Speaking of actors that are very, very good in something, I'd like to point out how great Fallout is on Amazon Prime. You don't have Amazon Prime, right?
I do not. I have not watched anything. I've seen the trailers. It is one of the 10,000 things I need to get to. I need to continue watching X-Men 97, for example. There's a lot.
Yeah, I started that too, by the way. So Fallout, we have our well-loved Walton Goggins, who stars alongside Ella Purnell and Aaron Motton. These are the three main characters in it, main actors. Walton Goggins plays a ghoul. Do you know what a ghoul is in
Fallout? No, I haven't played any of the Fallout games, right?
So you haven't played any Fallout games. Yeah, so Ella Purnell plays Lucy McLean. She's a Fallout shelter dweller, so she's a vault dweller, as they call them. Aaron Motton plays Maximus, who is part of the Brotherhood of Steel, another big faction in the Fallout games. And like I said before, Walton Goggins plays Cooper Howard, who you see him in the past as well. The actual show starts with him in the past, and he is transformed into a ghoul because of the radiation in the future.
Okay. So a motley crew of characters here.
Yeah, definitely. And it takes place in the Fallout universe. I think it's the furthest set in any of the, in terms of games and lore of the universe. But they really nailed the look and feel of what Fallout is. And I'm so happy with another great video game adaptation after watching The Last of Us, which I know you watched and you loved. Mm-hmm. This is up there. Mm-hmm. And I'm really hoping that the Horizon one that's coming up is going to be just as good.
I was thinking sometimes we should probably do like a quick rundown of like shows we've enjoyed / not enjoyed, because there's a fair amount of like video game adaptations out there now, right? Like, I, for example, like I talked a while back about how the Twisted Metal TV show is actually quite good. I loved the first season.
Yeah, great actors, great show. The only problem I'm finding now with Fallout is I keep saying okie dokie, which is something the main character says several times.
Right.
At one point, she says it just as she's about to do something very gruesome, very beyond what she's normally used to, having been a vault dweller.
Okay.
But yeah, I just keep saying okie dokie. I'm sure I've said it in this podcast.
Brainwashed. Not,
yeah, so that's what happens. But Fallout, highly recommend it. I was actually surprised that all 8 episodes were out at once. I wasn't prepared to watch it in a week, but I watched it in a week, and it was great.
Angela, you get 60 seconds to talk about the one thing you want to talk about right now.
The new Taylor Swift album, Brian, came out yesterday. Really great. And we were discussing it as a family. My daughter and wife have also been listening to it. And my wife said there's like a lot of lore surrounding this album. The titles of songs, who they're about, where they're numbered. And I asked my daughter if she thinks that if Taylor Swift and her music is like the Dark Souls of the music industry with all the lore and stuff. And she agreed.
Yeah. The most concerning thing I haven't listened to yet because I have other better things to do. That's not shade on Taylor. It's not a priority for me. But the song title, I Look in People's Windows, is a little concerning to me.
Yeah, pretty concerning, I guess. There's a song about Fortnite. It really wasn't about the game, though. Surprise.
With Post Malone, though.
Yeah, with Post Malone.
Yeah. No, who also is a character in Fortnite.
And he's a character in the Roadhouse remake.
Yeah, there you go, which I need to watch, too. Two friends of mine have mentioned how stupidly dumb it is and how much fun it is.
Also stupidly dumb, also on Prime, The Beekeeper with Jason Statham.
Oh, loved it. Loved it. I saw it in theaters. Loved it.
Right? Usually you watch a movie and like, oh, the protagonist has like some troubles at one point. Nope. I mean, no trouble going through everybody, this guy.
I know. It's great. Angela, let us move on over to the paranormal side of things where you and I are going to break down a book that you recently read that I'm almost done with. And I can't wait to talk about it. So let's head on over.
Coming soon to a theater near you.
Are you sorry, sir, that you brought your son along to see Alien?
No, ma'am. I think he should have seen it. It's something that he needs to know that things could like that could happen in life. That could be a true story.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for
Ridley Scott's Alien.
Double Density.
Welcome back to Double Density. As always, we're switching gears from tech to the paranormal. And Angelo is basically dying of laughter because he drank and stopped and drank.
The way you said welcome back was funny.
I tried to catch you on that because I knew that you were drinking from... What kind of brand of bottle is that?
It's I think they make microphones too. Blue Yeti. it's a Yeti. And it was a Christmas present from Santa.
Oh, there we go. Santa. Still believe in him, of course.
Yeah, well, everybody in the family each got a water bottle this year.
Oh, perfect. That has nothing to do with the paranormal side of things, though, right?
No, the paranormal side of things is the book UFO by Garrett M. Graff, who's...
Yes, so 2 weeks ago when we last recorded, we discussed the idea of you sort of like doing a book report style thing, right, Angelo?
Yes, and I feel like this is a UFO book by an author who has like the most clout in terms of like nonfiction writing of any UFO book I've really ever read.
So, Angelo, a theme had started to emerge when you and I were talking about this episode, and I realized I need to bring AI into this.
Oh, okay. I want to see how you do this. Did you come up with questions for me through AI? Is that what you did?
Go.
All right. Good job.
I opened up ChatGPT, and I typed in, I need you to give me a list of 10 questions I can ask a fourth grade class about a nonfiction book to get them to create a book report.
Oh, that's amazing, Brian.
I told Steph this before she left this morning. She died of laughter. She's like, Angela's going to love this.
Because I knew you were going to ask me questions, and then you mentioned the AI. I'm like, oh, yes, this is awesome. Great job.
All right, Angela, number one, what is the main topic or subject of the book?
Well, in his book, UFO, Garrett M. Graff talks about UFOs, the government, throughout its whole like lifespan of when we really started talking about UFOs. So it's from the Kenneth Arnold sighting up to now.
So mid-40s to now.
Mid-40s to now.
I had to do the math, but roughly 80 years. You realize
roughly
80
years. It's crazy. And something he sort of points out in the book is like the cyclical nature of this, right? Like UFOs, nobody believes them. They're called flying saucers. The government wants to change them to something a little more serious, so they start calling them UFOs. And now UFOs have the connotation of extraterrestrials, so they've changed it to UAPs, which is a stupid name, and they should go back to UFOs. But he doesn't say that. That's my own personal commentary.
All right, Angela, you talked about this at the top. The second question I have is, who is the author, and what makes them an expert on this topic?
I don't feel like he's an expert on this topic. He kind of mentions this, how he's come to be interested in it. He seems to be an expert on government stuff. Cover-ups, right? He wrote a book about Watergate. He wrote a book about how during the Cold War, the government had a plan to save themselves and no one else. So actually, that's on my bookshelf to read soon. But what I like about him, I don't feel like he's coming to this with baggage. He's not a ufologist with like a bias. He's not a hardcore scientist who totally doesn't believe in this with their own bias. I feel like he's more like one of us, except like a really good writer. But you're a good writer. I'm not.
I think that I'm like 80% of the way through the book, and I'll see, like, I actually agree with your assessment there, is that he approached this with a very open mind in terms of like letting the evidence guide him, or letting the anecdotes or whatever it is to help like create his thesis. And he's not reverse engineering your results, which is what a lot of authors tend to do, both on the skeptic side as well as the ufologist side of things, right?
Definitely. I feel like there's no agenda here. He just is, he's being very journalistic about it. And that's the thing, like with journalism too, right? The New York Times articles are very tinged with bias, because Leslie Kane, I feel like, has a huge bias towards UFOs wanting to be the extraterrestrial hypothesis.
Yeah.
Whereas he doesn't. He has like no horse in this game or in this race.
Which I think in some ways is helpful, because of the fact that like when you come into this with, I don't want to say baggage, I don't think baggage is the right word, but when you come to this with any sort of like lived belief or knowledge, then you might ask a certain set of questions as someone who has no idea what's going on. And I don't mean like no ideas and like they're dumb. I just said no ideas and like they don't understand the nuances or the intricacies of like what's been going on for a long time. And I feel like this book does a really good job of sort of like sorting through those very logically, which I really enjoy.
It touches on almost every famous case. It touches on some cases I wasn't really super knowledgeable about, but I knew most of them. But it's a great primer for the uninitiated or just somebody that has a passing interest.
Question number three, what are some key facts or pieces of information you learned from reading this book? So you mentioned largely recognizing most of what was in there, but I'm kind of curious, is there anything new that you're bringing to the table?
I feel like there's lots of information about the relationship between J. Allen Hynek and Carl Sagan.
Yes.
A lot of how Carl Sagan also touched this topic. A lot of information about SETI.
Yeah.
Really, really in-depth stuff about SETI. I feel like he spent the most on that. Basically because it's the thing with the most proof, right? Like that's a thing that's been done.
Yeah, it's an installation that happened. Yeah.
They've heard some signals. They got bad. They didn't really get a great budget from the government. Like a lot of promises were not kept. And it's great. There's some interesting tidbits about Robert Bigelow. Maybe this will be a question later, but my one disappointment in the whole book is that he didn't really spend too much time on Skinwalker Ranch.
Nor did he talk about HARP.
He didn't mention that once, I don't think.
No, I know. I was just thinking in terms of like installations.
Yeah.
When I think of SETI, I think of other like kinds of installations in the world, yeah, including HARP. You know, weather modification, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, Angelo, number four. This is probably the most important question I'm going to ask you. How is the information organized in the book? Is it chapters? Is it sections?
It's chapters and mostly in chronological order. Pretty much. It kind of jumps back and forth within a few decades sometimes, but mostly in chronological order.
Question number five, also equally important as a visual boy. Are there any illustrations, diagrams, or photographs that help you understand the content better?
There's a few sections of photographs. You know how they do that in hardcover books sometimes? There's like those middle sections with...
Well, I mean, even in soft covers. Like if I pull out any of these older UFO books, there's a couple of black and white ones too.
Yeah, there's some... Like there's those glossy pages in the middle of the book where there's pictures from a bit before the section and a bit after. Some great pictures too.
I'm holding up a paperback Brad Steiger Project Blue Book.
Well, he gets mentioned in the book. Does Brad Steiger get mentioned? Or is it remember. No? It's Jim Moseley that gets mentioned a lot in the book. Actually,
I'm just trying to pull up the copyright here. 1976, right? And there are two sections of black and white photos here. I'm holding them up for Angelo to see.
Great.
See that right there. Right. So 32 pages of official black and white photos, the top secret UFO findings revealed. Thanks, Brett Steiger. Number six, did the book include any real life examples or case studies? Many. If so, which one stood out to you the most and why?
Well, there's a lot and a lot
of... Are you crying, by the way?
No, it's...
You wiped both your tears. I feel like maybe the awesomeness of the book has driven you to feel tears. So emotional.
Yes. No, there's a lot mentioned about Roswell and that whole debacle, which was kind of fun. Really clearly pointing out how Aztec was completely made up, the whole crash and stuff, and how it's bonkers that people still believe that, as well as a lot of mentioning of MJ-12 and some discussion on that, some talk about Stanton Friedman, our favorite UFO guy, and again, everyone's UFO dad, J. Allen Hynek, mentioned a lot.
I was gonna
and
say,
my favorite, like, and of course, my favorite, Carl Sagan.
Yeah, your favorite, Carl Sagan, of course. How could I ever forget about Carl Sagan? All right, number seven. What did you find most interesting or surprising about this book and the topic?
Honestly, there's not much that surprised me in this book because I knew a lot of it. I just, like I said, the stuff with SETI, so much time, and it seemed like there was gonna be this great thing that never really fulfilled what they were hoping it would fulfill. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're not using the same radio waves as us, these aliens.
That is an interesting kind of theory that we've sort of touched upon before, yeah. About the idea there of, like, you know, even if it is an ETH, the extraterrestrial hypothesis, as you were saying before, like, how do we know they're not communicating in different wavelengths or ranges?
After reading this book, actually, I started watching, well, because it came out, it was Three Body Problem on Netflix. Yes. And I didn't realize, like, I had no idea what that show was about. Didn't read the book. And I mean, it starts with aliens communicating via radio waves, so it was kind of neat.
That is not the case for the original book, The Three-Body Problem. Very interesting first chapter there. I read through the original trilogy. I love it. I have not watched the show that, because, once again, it's one of 10,000 things I need to get to. But I find that what is most interesting, I think, is the tangle between, like, the darker elements of government as well as, like, the civil structures of government. And I think that's what we're seeing right now in the news a lot, too, is that tanglement between the wet work stuff, the top secret stuff, and then also, like, the more public-facing stuff from the politicking.
Yeah, that was actually a really big part of the book, and it made me go out and read some stuff about the issues during the Cold War between the U.S. and Russia, the CIA, all that stuff. So that stuff is super interesting to me. And if anybody comes away from this book thinking the government is hiding something, I'd be surprised, because this book points out how there's no way the government could have ever hidden anything. And any secrecy surrounding UFOs is basically because the government knows so little about them, they kind of want to keep that secret.
It's really funny. I don't know. Anyways, I landed on this because it's a recent book that came out. Have you heard of Annie Jacobson's Nuclear War, the book?
No, I haven't heard about it. She's the one who wrote the book about Area 51.
Yeah, exactly. The one that's like, hey, it's actually just a government installation. It's not aliens.
Yeah, I'm going to look that up, actually, on Amazon.
So it's called The Scenario. And basically what it is what happens to U.S. government officials when a nuclear strike is launched towards the USA. And it covers that in instances in terms of, like, minutes before, minutes after, and then onwards and upwards.
Huh. Yeah, this book is not easy to come by, unfortunately.
No. It just came out, so.
Oh, okay, that's why. Usually ships, that's what I'm saying. Usually ships in 3 to 5 days. Okay.
Yeah, it may be sold out or something. There may be a way.
Well, it's on the charts, though.
Yeah, you know, it's doing quite well, yeah.
It's number 12. You know what's number one on the charts, Brian?
Don't tell me. What?
Atomic Habits.
Of course. What a huge surprise. Anyways, it's funny because I was just thinking about how in those cases, Annie Jacobson did a lot of interviews with a lot of government officials who were in place and whose job, like, largely was to deal with this would-be scenario of a nuclear device heading towards the United States. And I find it kind of interesting in that, like, it lays bare a lot of how the government works. And just in you talking about this, it kind of made me think, too, of, like, the ways in which, like, it would be practically improbable but not impossible for alien test subjects, et cetera, to exist within this framework.
Yeah, because there's so much just leaks out. Oh, do you have a ghost opening your door, Brian, or is it a cat?
It's the cat.
Not too bad.
She's eating her lunch behind me. After a long morning of sleeping, and I heard her snoring before, so she's having a good nap.
Nice.
All right, Angelo, this is probably – I want you to think about this question for a sec, because I'm a little bit serious with this one, even though this is clearly for a bunch of fourth graders. But did the author provide any solutions or recommendations for the issues discussed in the book?
I don't feel like he inserted his own opinions into this too much. I feel like he was reporting it as best he could from a journalistic point of view. But maybe I missed what he was kind of saying on his own, but – essentially, it came away with, overall, like we just talked about, there's no way the government could have hidden this stuff. So if there were UFOs visiting us and they were aliens, we'd know about it by now. He also he touched upon the famous alien autopsy video as well.
The Ray Santilli one, you mean?
Yes.
One of my favorite pieces of found footage, I think.
Yes, definitely. But no, I don't feel like he came up with any solutions, because there's no solutions to be had. It's not that type of book. It's a book where he's really reporting what he's learned.
Yeah, he didn't come out and say, hey, government, stop lying. Nor did he say, hey, ufologists, like, stop believing. Like, it really just is an account of the facts with all the publicly available information out there, right?
I can't imagine the amount of research he did. Actually, I can, because...
I was going to say, in the back...
Well, so this is the thing. I'm reading this book. I'm like, wow, there's so much left. I'm really enjoying it. I can't wait to see where else he goes with this. And then I turn the page, and it says epilogue. And then it says
I always check. So you bought this.
I have a hardcover copy.
Yeah, exactly. I usually check to see how far back or how far for. Like, yes, it's like, for example, like, it's an 800-page book, but if it's 200 pages, that is sources. So I'm really just reading 600 pages.
Yeah, but it was great. It was the... Like, anyway, I'll probably be like the later question, but I highly recommend this book.
I was going to ask, yeah. So how does this, number nine, how does this book compare to other books you've read on similar topics?
This is by far the best UFO book I've read in terms of how, not entertainment-wise or whatever, but in terms of information, in terms of actual reporting and how the book is not tinged with the author's opinion.
Right.
And... of course, what helps is that it really jives with my point of view of how the UFO.
I'd be very curious to know if someone who is less skeptical would read this, how they would come across or how they would feel about this ultimately.
Anyone who even has just a passing enjoyment of UFOs or the paranormal, and even somebody who knows so much, like you and I, right? I feel like, we're in the 90th percentile of knowledge of UFOs.
I'd say more than that.
And even though the majority of cases in this book are things I already knew about, it didn't bother me because they were approached from a different point of view in a very, almost like clinical way, right? He just reported, just the facts, sir, right? Like, it's that's all it was. Anybody... who kind of likes UFOs would really benefit from this book. And actually, it'd be kind of fun to hand it to somebody who knows nothing about
UFOs. That's what I was thinking about. If we could find someone else to give this to have that discussion about and do a follow-up in a couple of months, if we could find someone.
If my wife read books or had time for it, I would hand it to her. But because of her job, it's kind of hard for her to read books until the summer. And then in the summer, she just wants to read her books. But maybe if I ask nicely, she'll read it.
I was going to say, ironically enough, an elementary school teacher too, right? So
Yes, exactly.
Kind of coming full circle with this. So highly recommend the book. Definitely. I'm almost done. I have 40 pages left before...
40 real pages or
40 real pages. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm not slowly parsing my way through all of the notes and annotations and things
that. No.
I also agree heartily with everything you said. Highly recommend the book. I think it's
really well written too.
Yeah.
I think so too. It's well edited. Obviously, it wasn't self-published. He's a great writer, and that's why I've gone in.
I mean, he does that for a living, right?
So. Yeah, I've gone and bought one of his other books. It's funny. I think I mentioned this already, but I was watching Turning Point about nuclear war and the Cold War, and he was one of the talking heads. So it was kind of fun.
Yeah, I loved it. I'm sure I'm going to love it till the end. I don't see it pivoting at all.
Imagine it's he gets his MAGA on towards the end.
That would be quite weird for me to just do the sudden turn.
Yeah, he doesn't come off as a MAGA guy either. No. So,
Angelo, where can people find us on the internet? Let's see if you get. It's been a couple of weeks. Let's see.
Well,
if you get this.
I mean, it's super easy. Doubledensity.net. I actually shared that website with a friend of mine this week. And go there. You can do everything you need from there. There's a form to fill out. You can easily reach us. That's the best way to get in touch with us.
You don't even need a humane AI pin to reach us.
No, we're not part of that, unfortunately. We didn't sign up for their app.
Did you say unfortunately? I think it's fortunately we're not part of that.
Oh, yeah, it's true, I guess. But you can find this on your iPhone in Overcast or in Apple Podcasts. No more Google Podcasts, unfortunately. That's gone.
I know. It's very weird. Also, if you feel free to leave us a review on there, no less than 5 stars, because obviously this is the best podcast hosted by a man named Brian and a man named Angela. Let's be honest out there.
I wonder if there's any other podcasts in the thousands and thousands of podcasts that are hosted by a Brian and an Angela.
Humane Penny could tell us.
Brian is looking this up right now.
Wait a second.
What do you even search? Podcast hosted by Brian and Angelo?
Yeah, I just typed in Brian Angelo. So there's something called the Successful Lift Podcast, where it looks like a man named Brian was a guest.
Okay.
With Angelo Cisco, who is a leader of Alpha Hippie, an executive coaching program.
Sounds like me.
Yeah. Congrats, Angelo.
So that's a no. Okay.
No, there's no. No, and also there's a Spotify artist named Brian Angelo with two months.
That's pretty funny.
So that's not us. Okay. You can also find us over on Instagram, Double Density Podcast, same thing on Threads, which I'm posting on semi-regularly now. It's been a little bit fun to figure out different things to post.
And, not X, though.
If you want to skip, fill out the contact form, doublednessypodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah. We're there. Ask us questions about the book, non-AI generated questions.
Yeah, or ask, AI to ask general questions to us. That is completely fine.
I wonder if anybody's ever sent us like an AI generated comment.
We have not gotten anything, no. Everyone's been very sweet and heartfelt in their emails.
Love it.
Awesome. This has been it for episode 266 of the Double Density Podcast. And tune in next week as Angela decides to do some finger paintings based on the book UFO by Garrett M. McGrath. Angela, I will see you there, friend. Get ready to paint.
I'm going to go listen to some Tidal music on my humane pen.